Yeah, I mean, I've had kind of a up and down experiences in Denver. I mean, I've had the win my first game ever starting that week 17 game, week 16, whatever it was. Then I had the Monday Night Football game where we got the comeback victory, and then I had that game where I got hurt. But if you've looked at it, I mean, it's a great atmosphere to play, and I like going there. I mean, obviously not the fans this year, but they're usually a great fan base. They love their football, and so I'm excited for it. And it's going to be a snow game, and I'm pretty excited for that as well.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. A lot of things have happened with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs in Denver. Hopefully this will be another good chapter on Sunday. Another man who spent many cold days in Denver playing for the Chiefs. Tim Grunhard now joins us. Hello, Tim. How are you?
Good morning. Yeah, these guys are getting lucky, man. They're getting... in a lot of these fun snow games. This will be a couple of years in a row now they've had a snow game. So
my son's first game ever, regular season game, I took him last year. His birthday's in December, and so I took him to the Chiefs Broncos game, the snow game last year, and it was awesome.
Yeah,
we loved it, man.
Those are special.
Yeah,
always a lot of great memories. One of the things that my high school coaches would used to say is, let's play to Thanksgiving and maybe we'll get a snow game, because Thanksgiving obviously was a state championship. And then, you know, in the playoffs, we would every once in a while get a snow game. No big, accumulations, but, you know, some flurries. But I was telling Frank last night, I'll never forget, my big snow game was up in Denver. And the weather was a little bit like yesterday when the game started. It was a little bit misty. It was about the mid-40s, and it was a little cold. It was a little bit windy. But we went out there, and, you know, just kind of a normal, you know, just kind of cloudy day up in Denver. And as the second quarter started to roll around, just a little bit of flurries, a little bit of snow started coming down, and went in at halftime and came back out, and there was like 3 inches of snow on the ground, and it continued to snow hard the rest of the game. And that was the game that Marcus Allen got the record for touchdowns scored by a running back. And, boy, it was just a lot of fun. So these guys are going to have a blast. And with the kind of running game that they showed last week, and I tweeted out that Marty Schottenheimer would have a big smile on his face, and he would. And it was a fun game to watch for us old offensive linemen, guys that played in that kind of system. It was fun to watch those guys do it. We understand with the analytics and everything else now that you know, you got to be able to do all kinds of things in the NFL now to win, and you have to do different things to win a Super Bowl. We obviously didn't have Patrick Mahomes, so we weren't able to do some of those things. But it was fun to watch the offensive line. It was fun to watch those young guys, Kilgore and Alec Reddy, and even Wiley started to pick up his game a little bit inside, kind of feeding off those other two. They were finishing blocks. And one of the things that you're going to have to do, and I heard while I was driving in Latavius Bell talk about his, you know, patience and the things that he does with the ball when he's running it. And if you're an offensive lineman, you have to finish your blocks with a running back like Bell, because he's going to set you up. And if you continue to push, you continue to keep your feet moving, you continue to finish plays, he'll set you up for success. So that's one thing that they're going to have to do a little bit different than maybe they had to do with the running backs they've had here over the last couple of years. But he does have the ability to put his foot in the ground and run through the seam or run through the hole if it presents itself. The other thing the Chiefs are going to do a bunch more, I think, with Bell is run some of the gap running plays, some of the power, the counter, the traps, because he does a really good job of setting those blocks. If you think about it, the one thing that this guy does really, really well with running the ball is setting blocks. And gap run plays are set up for setting blocks. When you run your zone plays, he has an innate ability to set blocks in a zone, which is really hard to do because you have to have the ultimate confidence in your game to be able to do that, because, I mean, you're basically floating around back there waiting for that zone to open up. So we'll see if the Chiefs can do that with him. They're not really set up offensive line-wise to do that right now. But with these young guys in there, they got a better chance. But the one thing I want to tell everybody here in Kansas City is there are actually two things. Number one, this guy is an unbelievable pass protector. He does a great job. And we could talk about it maybe in the second hour about some of the responsibilities that he has and what he'll do for this offense with pass protection, which is really, really vital, I think, with Patrick Mahomes back there. And number two, He does a great job of running routes. He can catch the ball. He's a proven pass catcher. I'm not saying Hilaire is a guy that isn't proven, but this guy's a proven pass catcher. And this is what I'm making my little Marty called them green box statements, where you'd make a prediction, you put it in a box, and if you were right, then you're right, Granny, or hey, you're right, Zotter. You're going to see both Hilaire and Bell in the backfield together. And they're going to move one or the other guy around, and that's going to cause so many issues. Number one, you're either going to have to take a linebacker out of the box to cover him, or you're going to have to take a safety out and top him off. And that just opens up everything else. That's why defensive coordinators, and Fangio even said it kind of in a roundabout way earlier in the week, that this new dynamic, this new dimension of the running game that the Chiefs have with Hilaire and Bell is causing so many havoc, so many problems, and caused so much havoc with defensive coordinators, because you have to account for those guys. And when you account for those guys, then you have to take somebody off of Kelce, or you have to take somebody off of Hill, or you have to get out of a zone defense that you don't want to get out of. So couple things. Last week, Buffalo decided, hey, we're going to do what the Chargers did. We're going to do what the Raiders did. And they're going to drop their linebackers at the snap, and they're going to drop guys deep. And the Chiefs ran the ball well. So now teams are going to have to figure out, what are we going to do? And we could talk about that here a little bit in the next hour.
We have Tim Grunhardt in studio. You can follow me on Twitter at SSJWHB. I've just posted a picture of me, Grunny, and Todd Lebo the night before the Super Bowl in Florida at our huge celebration. We'll find out what was on Grunny's shirt next on Sports Radio 810 WHB in 38th The Spot.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've done well. I mean, I've done well enough to win the games for the most part. I always look to improve, always look to get better. But I feel like as an offense and me personally, that we're really improving game by game and really understanding what's there and what's there to be had and what's there to go get. And so we're doing a great job of that. And I'm just excited for the progression of keep getting better and better. And as we get more and more challenges, being able to step up to that challenge and make adjustments quickly. And I don't think we're doing a great job of that so far.
All right, Timmy, we'll talk about what might have been on your shirt down at the Super Bowl in the 7 o'clock hour.
Okay,
that's a tease.
That's a tease.
That's bait for the listener. Now I want to spend this segment talking about the interior offensive line. That is your specialty, and this is a good time to talk about it. As you mentioned, some new faces. Let's focus on Daniel Kilgore, because the Chiefs signed him August 27th, right before the season started, and we talked about it because it felt like, okay, this could end up being one of those signings that we don't talk a lot about, but could end up paying some nice dividends for the Chiefs, because they're getting a guy that had started 13 games the previous year in Miami, and before injury back in 2016 and 2017, had started a combined 29 games for the 49ers. So he comes in here with plenty of good experience, starting, I think, a career 57 games, or 56 games before he got to Kansas City. And so we know that Austin Ryder was trying to battle through a knee injury. So let's focus on Daniel Kilgore as a guy that came in here, 32 years old, a veteran that started a bunch of games. What did he bring to the offensive line when he started at center against the Buffalo Bills?
Well, when you watch him, he knows a lot about just the kind of the techniques and the responsibilities of an offensive line, which is really important. Once again, we always talk about hesitation in the NFL. You are trying to get a defensive player or an offensive player to hesitate or just to pause for a little bit, because then you win. Most guys are pretty similar as far as abilities in the NFL. There's not a lot of guys that there's a big drop-off. There's not, like, in college or in high school, you find the weakest link on the offensive line, or you find the weakest link on the defensive line, and you try to take advantage of it. There's really not that in the NFL. Now, there's guys that are better than other guys, but you go from superstar to, you know, good. Okay, so there's not that. So what you try to do is you try to outmaneuver and you try to get guys to hesitate or to question themselves or maybe not being on the same page with the guy next to him. And I thought that Kilgore did a really nice job of communicating in there. And one of the things we talked about a couple weeks ago in the morning on this show is the communication I thought was off in the middle of the offensive line. I couldn't figure out why because, you know, Reeders, I like him. I think he's a good kid. I think he really is an overachiever. You know, listen, they won a Super Bowl with him. So, you know, that's pretty damn good. But I thought for some reason or another, maybe because LTD was out Tardif was out, and maybe, you know, there's some new guys in there that the communication and kind of being on the same page wasn't there. And in the middle, you know, when Zotter and Will Shields and I were in there, I mean, the communication was one of the things that we really, really worked on all the time because you got to be on the same page. And one of the examples I gave last week, you know, before they made this change, was that it didn't seem like the guard and the center were on the same page and some of the pass protection things they were doing because the center was leaving. I don't know if you remember me talking about this. Center was leaving a little bit quick on those one techniques, and they were getting penetration in some of the holding calls that Osemele had were, you know, they were tough holding calls because he had to get his body across a one technique, which is hard to do when a guy's on your inside shoulder and you got to cut him off and pass protect at the same time right in the middle of pocket. That is a really, really difficult thing to do. So the center, what his job is, all he needs to do is to turn the inside shoulder of that one technique. If you can turn the inside shoulder with a punch, that gives that guard enough time to get across. You don't have to stone him. You don't have to move him. All you got to do is turn him. Once again, get to that hesitation. And once you get to that hesitation, then that guard can get there. So I thought the communication was really good inside. The other thing that I thought, and maybe it's just because of the game plan or maybe it was because of the way the Buffalo Bills were playing, I thought that Kilgore, Allegretti, and even Wiley, they were finishing plays. They were driving guys down the field. One of the things that always bugged me about the offensive line for the Chiefs, and I'm not sure if it was something they were taught or the way that they just did things, they would get on guys and they would stay in front of them, but they wouldn't finish guys down the field. When you look at great offensive lines, and there are some great ones out there, Pittsburgh was one of them, Dallas was one of them. You know, there's some of these teams are struggling now. The Raiders were one of them. You always see guys finishing blocks. And one of the things that Howard Mudd, God rest his soul, would tell Zotter and I, and when Will came in, Will, is, hey, listen, when you get on a guy, you've got to finish him. You've got to keep pushing. And this doesn't mean that all of a sudden if you stalemate that you stop. Because, once again, you have Bell coming in, right? A great running back. And what does he do? He sets up the offensive line. So if you continue that pressure, continue that push on a defensive lineman, and he's peeking in the backfield at a running back like Bell, you know, once Bell sets him, now he starts to move. If you have your feet moving and you're continuing to push and you're continuing to work the play, then you can get a good finish on him and take him farther than he wants to go. And that's what Bell's looking for. That's why he does such a great job of getting yards after patient sets. And that's what the Chiefs need to do with him. But they have those guys in there right now that have that in them. I don't think they had that inside over the last couple of years. They had guys that get in front of you, guys that would be nice seams, but there was no big push. And when you saw Allegretti and you saw Kilgore do that, you know, it started to become a habit. It started to become something that the whole offensive line was doing. And once again, I've said it many, many times, it's a kind of a deal where all of a sudden you see one or two guys doing it and you say, you know, hey, the offensive line, they kind of follow. So you're going to see more of that, I think, with that kind of attitude inside.
We have Tim Grenhard in studio. We have a few minutes left, and so let's focus a little bit on Nick Allegretti. Mm-hmm. The 2019 draft, fellas, this has the chance, top to bottom, just to be a really good, solid, productive draft for the Chiefs. They've already got plenty of return from Mecole Hardman and Juan Thornhill. Colin Saunders is designated to return from IR, and so that was their two second-round picks and then their third-round pick. In the sixth round, they got Rashad Fenton. That's already been a damn good pick. The other sixth-round pick was Darwin Thompson. He's been on the field. We'll see how he turns out. And then the seventh-round pick of that draft, Nick Allegretti. And we saw him perform very well this past game. So, boy, all six players have had some type of impact already, and it remains to be seen how much and how well this draft will look in a couple of years. But so far, so good. Allegretti is that seventh-round pick. You've been talking about him, Timmy. He looked damn good against the Bills.
Yeah, he did. You know, once again, we go to attitude and toughness. He's a tough guy. He may not be as athletic as some of the guys that have played in there over the last couple of years, but he is really tough. He's really physical. He brings a lot of attitude. You know, he's a mauler. He's a groundhog. He's a guy that he wants to get in there and get dirty and get nasty and play hard. He's a kid from the south side of Chicago. I think he's from like Plainfield or.
That's why you like him. That's why you've been talking about him so much.
And so he brings a lot of attitude. And I remember when they drafted him, I talked to a couple of the guys from University of Illinois that coached him, and they said that this kid is a pit bull. When he gets on you, he's just not going to let up. And we saw that. Now, listen, he's not as athletic, so there's going to be times when he struggles with movement and stuff like that. But if he gets on you, Katie, bar the door, you're going to go for a ride. And that's the kind of stuff that you got to have. You got to have that attitude. I'll give up a couple, you know, guy getting beat physically at the point of attack every once in a while, but to get a guy that's so nasty and tough that he's going to set the tone for that offensive line. I think you're going to see, and you know what? One of the things that we did, Zotter and I, we're not patting ourselves on the back. When we came in, Howard Mudd said, hey, you two need to set the tone. Doesn't matter if you're young guys. You go out there and you finish and you play hard and you play physical, and it's going to be something that all the guys are going to do because it's contagious on an offensive line when you got a couple guys that are doing that.
We have Tim Grunhardt in studio back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Okay, Timmy, when everyone is healthy, what should the Chiefs' starting offensive line be moving forward?
I think you saw it. I think they're going to keep it that way. And that's nothing against the guys that were replaced, but you know one of them is hurt.
Mitch comes back, they'll put him back at right tackle.
Oh yeah. No. At the beginning of that game, I think that's the offensive line that you'll see. You got Mitch at right tackle. You'll probably have Reimers at right guard, Kilgore at center, Allegretti. You could put Wiley in there. Probably it'll be Wiley. Reimers will be the guy who kind of fits in, then Fisher. So I think it's a good offensive line. Listen, there's nothing against the guys that get replaced. It's part of the deal. You know, they had the first quarter of this season to kind of show what they can do, and I think there's been some problems and a little bit of issues in the middle of the pocket. Part of the reason why the Chiefs we're looking for some different changes in there, and if you look at some of the pressures that Patrick Mahomes has had over the last couple games, especially against the Raiders, you know you got to make some changes. That is your franchise guy back there, so you got to it's all about change. It's all about making adjustments, and on the offensive line. You know, you don't like to make adjustments in the middle of the year, but because of injuries and because of just, maybe one guy wasn't performing up to the standards that they wanted or Andy Heck wanted, that you make some changes to see what other guys could do.
And they did acquire Kilgore late, so it might have been a process of working him into the system, letting him develop into what the Chiefs are wanting to do because of how late they signed him. And maybe just now he's starting to get comfortable within this offensive scheme.
Yeah, absolutely. And you bring a veteran guy like that who, it's about communication and it's about getting all the guys on the same page, and maybe that's something that wasn't happening for one reason or another early in the year. So we'll see. I think that'll be the offensive line until, there's going to be some injuries. There's going to be some, knock on wood, some COVID issues. Look at what's happening with the Raiders right now. That stuff will rear its ugly head. So it's good to have a bunch of guys who have some experience, and good to have a bunch of guys who can step in when is needed, the Reimers and Reeder and and you know, whoever else they want to put in there that they think could do it. But you have two guys that definitely could pop in there and hold their own. So that's a good problem to have.
So Ryder was battling in the injury, and that's what they say why Kilgore got the start. But mm-hmm. It's hard to take Kilgore out after that. So if Ryder's healthy and everyone's healthy, you would stick with Kilgore. Now originally against Buffalo, it was Wiley and Remmers at guard. Mm-hmm. But then after seeing what you saw from Allegretti, so let's say Mitch Schwartz comes back, he's obviously a right tackle, and then so then you have Remmers or Allegretti and Wiley on the other side. Or would you move forward as the starter, Remmers or Allegretti, or would you consider? I mean, would you leave Wiley in there? It's a good problem to have, but they probably do need to decide on someone. Who do you think's better? What the Chiefs want to do moving forward, Allegretti or Remmers at that guard spot?
Well, listen, they're going to go with the guy that they drafted and developed. You know, Remmers is a guy that's basically was brought in to kind of fill a gap. You know, the arrow is not pointing up on Remmers. He's a guy that they brought in. You know, maybe they get one more year out of him. Maybe they don't. You know, look what happened with Zanuski last year. You know, bring a guy in and he comes in and he plays well, but he's gone. So, you know, you got to start developing these young guys on the offensive line. You want offensive linemen to play together for years. So will Remmers be a guy that will play here for years? No, I don't think so. But Allegretti could be a guy who could play here for years. And once again, he has some limitations when it comes to athleticism. He's a bit of a waist bender, which means that, you know, he gets a little bit stiff in his upper body. And when that happens, he kind of leans a little bit, so he could be beat on pass protection at times. He probably, if I'd rate him in a pass protection situation, you know, I'd give him about a B-. But in run blocking, he's an A. And he's a guy that, you know, he's tough, he's physical. But you can help the guard. All right, so, you know, inside the center could turn towards Allegretti if there's a guy that he may struggle against, and, you know, get a double team on him and then pop him out to help out with the tackle. Or, you know, you can drag off him like I just talked about. The center could drag off him, give him some help, and let him kind of get settled in, and then the center can leave and go and push protection to the other side. So you in the middle, those three guys are basically, you know, working together against two, unless you bring a blitz. Or you bring some pressure, and then, you know, then you gotta get off and you gotta do your responsibility. But the way that the Chiefs have been attacked up front has been with four, and they were struggling against four. They were struggling against three. So you know, if you can get a couple guys that have tough physical finishers, and you can get those guys on the same page inside, then you can take care of those four, and I think you'll be okay. Because that's the recipe right now to beat the Chiefs, to bring four and to drop, six or even seven guys back there and try to fill all those zones up and kind of cause traffic issues in the middle of the field. And if so, if you can get guys on the same page, you can cover up for some of the limitations in the pass protection. But when you have a guy that's tough and physical, is going to play hard, and, you know, we call 110% guy, you know, he's going to finish guys down the field. He's going to get out there. He's going to be nasty. He's going to be tough. He's going to pound on people. And that's a good guy to have in there when you can help him in pass protection.
How much, if at all, does it help these guys in pass protection, though, if they are actually running the ball downhill some through the course of these games?
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's huge. And that's the world that I lived in. I mean, we weren't the best pass protector. You know, Will Shields was, you know, he's a Hall of Fame football player. And, you know, but Dave and I and Alty was a good pass protector. But you know, whoever was at right tackle usually struggled a little bit with Graham or Criswell or even Glenn Parker, who was out there. So we depended on running the ball and getting defensive linemen to kind of worry about the double teams and worry about getting pushed back and worry about somebody going physical in his chest and driving him back, so that they couldn't get into what we call that green mode, or in that money mode, they call it, where they just pin their ears back and rush after the quarterback. And really, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're a all-pro, Pro Bowl tackle or guard or center. If you have to pass the ball all the time, if the defensive linemen know you're going to pass, you're behind the eight ball. You're behind. That is not a good situation for an offensive line to be in ever. And the Chiefs in the past – And I think they'll continue that. They'll run just enough to keep you guessing, to keep you off balance. But they want to throw the ball. But to answer your question, it's perfect. That's exactly what you want. You want to be able to run the ball. You want you want those linebackers peeking in the backfield. You want those defensive linemen worried about the double teams. You want the defensive linemen worried about getting driven back off the ball before they go into that pass rush mode.
Tim Grunhard is our guest. Timmy, this week's opponent, the Denver Broncos, coming off an 18-12 victory over the New England Patriots. Drew Lock was not sharp. He threw a couple of bad interceptions, but it was his first game back after returning from injury, and so you would expect him to be better. Tell me what you expect to see from the opponent, the Denver Broncos, this week in Denver.
Well, I think they're going to try to do what most of the other teams try to do against the Chiefs. First of all, on the offense, they're going to try and run the ball. You know, they have some good running backs. I think, you know, Drew is working his way back into kind of playing shape. I think he'll play better this week, unfortunately. But fortunately, because he's our guy, we like Drew. We want to see him have success. Not against the Chiefs, but we want to see him have success. He's a Missouri kid. He's a Kansas City kid. You know, Noah's dad, good family, good Kansas City family, or at least Summit family. But we want to see him do well, and I think he'll do a little bit better this week. I think he was just, I mean, it's rusty. It's hard to get back in there and play it at your A game when you've been out for so long. So I think that he'll play better, but they're going to try and run the ball. They're going to try to keep Patrick Mahomes as a Gatorade player on the side, sitting there with his hat on and, you know, with a Gatorade bottle in his hand, so that he's not on the field to hurt him. So they're going to run the ball. They're going to have some short passes. They're going to try and control the clock. I think that if you're sitting in their meeting room right now, Vic Fangio and the offensive staff would say, listen, we need to get to 38 to 40 minutes of time of possession against these guys in order to give ourselves any chance of winning this game. And if we're going to get to that, we've got to control it. Control the ball. We got to run the ball. We got to convert on third downs. You look what the Chiefs did last week. I mean, I think they were, 9 of 14 on third down situations, and I think there were 6 of them that were, a third or 10-plus that they were able to convert. Just amazing stuff. And when you do that, you just wear defenses down and you control the time of possession, and that's a good thing for your team. So that's what I think Denver will try and do on the offensive side. On the defensive side, I think you're going to see status quo. I don't think that people still believe that the Chiefs want to run the ball. I think they're going to think this is an aberration, that Andy Reid, you know, was put in a situation where he had to run it, so he, you know, and they got a little bit of momentum, so they did run it. I think that they're going to say, hey, listen, we're not going to let Patrick Mahomes beat us. We're not going to let Tyreek Hill beat us. We're not going to let, you know, Travis Kelce beat us. Well, that's going to be their plan anyways. So I think you're going to see the Chiefs run the ball again, especially with the weather being a little bit poorer than they're used to. It's not as easy to throw the ball. Now, you can throw the ball. And to be brutally honest with you, you know, people always think that when bad weather favors the defense, but it doesn't, because those wide receivers know where they're going. They know the routes they're running. The defensive guys have to adjust to that. When you can't get your feet underneath and you're slipping and sliding, then guys usually tend to get open. We saw that the last couple poor weather games the Chiefs played. So the Chiefs will be able to throw the ball if they want to, but I think they're going to run the ball. And I think there's maybe even this week, I think by the end of the season, you're going to see both of these guys in the backfield together. When I'm talking about Allaire and Bell. But you may even see it this week. And what do you do? And once again, we talked about it earlier. If you're playing cover 4 and you have both of those guys in the backfield, or playing cover 2, you have 2 deep safeties. So, you know, that puts a lot of stress on that defense. So what do you do? Do you bring a safety up into the box? If you do that, then you're opening up the seams where, you know, Hill or Pringle or Robinson or anybody, you know, they can get that one-on-one with a little bit of space, and that's what Patrick Mahomes wants. Or Travis Kelce kind of roaming in the middle, that's what he wants. If you bring that safety up to account for that back or those backs, Now, if you leave a linebacker on him, and all of a sudden now Andy Reid's going to see that, he's going to move that guy and he's going to separate that linebacker out of the box, which will be able to help the running game, and it puts the defense in a bad position because now you have a linebacker basically covering an elite pass-catching running back who has speed. So, you know, there's just not a lot of good answers. So that's why I think the Chiefs did a nice job of bringing in a guy like Bell, and there's a lot of positives to it. Now, there's a couple negatives. You know, we'll see if those negatives rear their ugly head. But, with this locker room and the guys that are in the locker room and the friends that Bell have on this team, I think they'll be able to limit that a little bit. And, you know, I think guys sometimes that when you're losing football games, you're maybe not getting the touches, and you get frustrated with the offensive line, or you get frustrated with whatever is affecting your game, that, you know, you're a competitor and you get a poor attitude and you start to bitch and moan and locker room lawyer a little bit. That's just kind of the way it is. But when you have a guy that has, you know, guys in the locker room that he already has relationships with, and you're on offense, and you understand, and he even said, listen, there's only one ball, you know, he's probably going to get between 10 to 12 touches this week, I would think. And then maybe at the top, he'll get 20 touches. But the thing is, he takes pressure off this young rookie as the season gets on, he's going to have a lot of wear and tear. You know, he's going to put some miles on that tread, and that's tough to do. So he takes some pressure off him. He takes some pressure off him in pass protection. You take some pressure off him in running the ball. And you give him a breather, which is a good thing to do. And it's nothing but a good positive thing for the Chiefs to have another running back in there to take a little bit of pressure off. Because really, to be really honest with you, the other two guys who are playing okay never stepped up to be the number two guy.
So to back up your point about how the snow doesn't really adversely affect the offense too much, that snow game last year against Denver, Patrick Mahomes completed 79% of his passes for 340 yards.
Yeah.
Two touchdowns. He did have a pick. But, you remember that game, like he did not have a problem throwing the football in the snow against the Denver Broncos, so he should be fine.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he should be fine, and it'll be really interesting to see, and it'll show early in the game. And this is what I want you to look for, okay? If you watch the Chiefs on offense, all right, and you look at that defensive set, if you see those two safeties that are kind of deep and on those hashes, all right, then they're going to go kind of with the status quo, what people have been doing to slow the Chiefs down. But if all of a sudden you see just one safety kind of standing in the middle of those hashes, then you know that they made a decision that they're going to try to limit the running game and hope that they can play physical at the corner position to try to limit the Chiefs getting off the ball with their wide receivers and give that safety a little bit of time that's kind of moved up in the box a little bit to read and get back to where he needs to get. So if they play cover two or cover four against the Chiefs, I think the corners will play off a little bit and do what teams have been doing against the Chiefs. Although at times you saw the Patriots come in and play physical against the running backs. But in a cover two, you're opening your hips and you're running at the defensive back position. If you see a safety in the middle of the field, then watch those corners. They're going to be up tight because now they're saying to that safety, you need to peek in the backfield. If it's a run, you need to go up and support. If it's a pass, you've got to bust your ass and you got to get back to where you're supposed to be in that deep third and get to that coverage zone. So it's going to put a lot of pressure on whichever safety they decide to do that with. So, you know, the Chiefs are they're going to play some games early. It'll be interesting to see what the Denver Broncos. Now they may disguise that too. They may disguise and show cover 3 and then all of a sudden drop into cover 2 or cover 4 because they want the Chiefs to run the ball and they don't want to get beat with the big plays. Big chunk plays are what the Chiefs are known for. And if you can limit those big chunk plays, then you have a half of a chance. Now look at the game last week. One of the things that happens when I lived in this world for 11 years, when you run the ball and you run the ball consistently, you run the ball hard, you're going to have closer games. I mean, the Chiefs dominated that game all the way on both sides of the ball, other than maybe special teams, but they dominated that game. And guess what? They could have lost that game if that fumble wasn't called back.
Yep.
All right, so that's going to happen, and that's part of the world you're going to live in. Right now, defensive coordinators who were sitting there in isolation or in quarantine all summer, sitting in their basement, they found ways to limit the Chiefs. Not only divisional, not only conference, but everybody in the league, every defensive coordinator said, what are the Chiefs doing and how do we stop it? And that's what they sat in their dark basements when they couldn't get to over to the facility and they couldn't coach their players. They sat there and they watched the Chiefs. What do we do? And guess what? They were ahead of the Chiefs a little bit earlier in the year. The Chiefs still won the games because they're more talented and they got Patrick Mahomes. But those defensive coordinators have done a nice job of really causing some issues and getting Patrick Mahomes a little bit frustrated. Well, now, you know, the chess piece has moved on the offensive side. Now, what's the defense going to do? So, advantage defense early. Even though the Chiefs were winning, even though the Chiefs were doing some great things on offense, advantage the defense early because they had the first move in that chess match. Now that counter has come. Now they have a couple backs that can run the ball and they could do some different things. Now what is the move that defenses are going to do? Because once you get them to have that, get into that second part of that playbook or that second option or that second game plan, that's when you could take advantage of them because A, they're not as confident in what they have because they sat all summer in the first four games. They knew exactly what they wanted to do against the Chiefs. Now, the players, it's themselves, they've been coached up all offseason. They've been coached up all summer, and they were coached up all as the season started and during the game week about how they were going to stop the Chiefs. Now you have to change that up a little bit, and now the players don't have as much confidence in the game plan. It's just a natural thing. Now they're going to say they do, and they're going to say that they have a good plan against the Chiefs, but there's something a little bit different they're going to have to do, which is change. When change causes what? Hesitation. And when you hesitate in the NFL, once again, you lose, or you struggle, or you get beat.
Any play where you can take the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands, that's a win for the defense.
Absolutely.
Period.
But when you have,
did you hear Sean McDermott's comments after the game?
No.
I don't know if we still have him in the system, Jake. But they played him on the program. But I'll paraphrase what he said. He basically said that he said it two or three times. You got to pick your poison. With this offense, you got to pick your poison when you're facing the Chiefs. And he said, "Look, are we happy with the way everything went? No, but we were still in the game at the end." And then he referenced, "You've seen some other teams go out there and get blown out with the football flying over their heads." He was just fine with the way things happened. And in his mind, he's thinking if his quarterback would have been more efficient and would have made some plays early on, that they had the formula to win that football game. Listen to Sean McDermott after the game.
Listen, this is an explosive offense we went against. So got to pick your poison a little bit. And I know the numbers statistically aren't good, you know, when we look at our defense against our offense. But you got to pick your poison here in terms of how you want to go about attacking them. This is an explosive offense, right? Mainly through the air. So you got to pick your poison here, what you're trying to take away. And then on the other end, you're going to give a little bit, right? And so I'm not saying that we liked what we gave up in the run game. That said, towards the end of the game, we were in the game, you know, as opposed to some people that are getting blown out because the ball is flying over their head in the pass game with Mahomes and Hill and 17 and whatnot and Kelsey. So you got to pick your spots against an explosive offense.
that's amazing to me because you're listening. If you didn't know the teams, that could have been like a small college talking about playing at an SEC school and feeling good that they were in the game at the end, even though they gave up 300 yards rushing. Right? That sounded like the worst team in football just being happy they were competitive with a playoff team. That was the coach of a 4-1 team. That had the same record as the Chiefs going into that game. And Timmy, you tell me, he sounded just fine with the way everything went and with the way everything happened, and he felt like his team was in it and had a chance to win it at the end, and it sounds like if they were to meet up again in the playoffs again, that we'll see the same thing from Buffalo, and they'll be pretty happy about it.
Yeah, you know, I think McDermott, by listening to that, you know, in that first team meeting as they sat down on Wednesday morning, He said, hey, listen, here's what we're going to do. We are going to try to stay in this game and give ourselves an opportunity to win in the fourth quarter. And if all things go right, in the fourth quarter, we have the ball last, and I can hear it as if I'm sitting in there. Whoever has the ball last is going to win the game. And he was almost right, because if Hilaire's knee isn't down a millisecond before that ball, and it was close, but it was down. If that knee is not down, if for some reason he tries to push for an extra yard, or his knee lands on somebody's ankle, or whatever it is, and that ball comes out, the Buffalo Bills have an opportunity to win that game.
Mm-hmm.
So that was their game plan. But you're exactly right. I mean, it's a weird dynamic. When you have an offense and you have an MVP player, it's the same thing as the Jordan rule in basketball. Listen, Jordan's going to get his, right? We want to limit everybody else. And I think teams are starting to say that with the Chiefs is, hey, listen, Mahomes is going to get his. He's going to bring some big plays. We're not going to try to let him have those big plays, but he's going to do what he does. But if we can limit everybody else so we can keep the game close when we get to the fourth quarter and give ourselves a chance to win, then that's what we're trying to do. And that's exactly what they did.
Or a little bit of, let's get the ball out of Jordan's hands. Let's run a double team at him as quickly as possible and force him to pass it to somebody else, because even if Steve Kerr is good at hitting threes, I'd rather make them beat us by Steve Kerr hitting threes than by Jordan, you know, tearing us up.
Perfect example.
And I'm laughing. I'm thinking,
who had the better game plan, the Ravens or the Bills?
Right. And there's,
and it's crazy to say that, the amount of rushing yards the Bills gave up, to say they had the better defensive game plan than anyone, but they did.
Well, I'm thinking of that scene from The Princess Bride when he's got the two poison and chalices, and he says, you've made a classic mistake. Never try to match wits with a Sicilian when death is on the line. You know, and it turns out they're both poison.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nate Buchady as Wallace Shawn.
Thank you very much. Inconceivable. But honestly, guys, this is actually an NFL conundrum now, too. Now, the Chiefs are the best of all these great offenses, but when you look around the league right now, the offenses are dominating the sport, right? The teams can throw the ball. Teams have quarterbacks who can beat you in different ways. They can run. They can pass. They've got speed around the field. The rules are in favor of the offense. And yeah. I was listening to some coaches talk about, you almost have two choices of what you just talked about, Stephen. Like, you can go the Baltimore Ravens way, who have this really good defense, but if you look at their games, they're not dominating people and shutting them out the way they used to. They're just making big plays. Their attitude is, we're going to throw enough at you through the course of the game that we're going to get a few sacks and a couple turnovers, and if we can screw you up four or five times through the course of the game, that's enough for our team to win. Or you can do the way the Patriots and the Bills did, which is, we're just going to limit you from hitting all the big plays, and we're going to basically let you big boy us all game, which is tough to do in the sport of football. You basically have to sit there and bite down while the other team is beating you up the whole game. And a lot of guys don't want to take that for four quarters. And so it's like, even with other teams, not just the Chiefs, defenses are almost having to decide, and it kind of seems like that's the Chiefs' approach a lot of times right now with Spags, is we're going to mix enough things up at you, throw enough blitzes at you. You might beat us a few times, but we're going to get you enough times that if you turn the ball over three times and we sack you two or three times, that's enough for our offense to go win the game.
Yeah, and with that, I know we got to take a break, but with that, the formula with bringing pressure, bringing blitzes, just puts the ball in Patrick Mahomes' hands, and when he gets outside, he's a creator out in space. So, and
he'll kill you.
He'll just kill you. So the best thing to do is cause traffic issues, drop guys, say, hey, run the ball. We're going to keep you in front of him. We'll give you those 7-8 yard runs, but we're not going to give you those 30-40 yard passes.
All I'll tell you is this. If I'm a defensive coordinator, a defensive player, every time Patrick Mahomes doesn't have the football, I'm good. Yep. I'm happy with that. We'll be right back after this with Tim Grunhardt on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Why do you do this, Jake?
Go south side of Chicago.
This is one of my top 10 favorite songs, so I don't want to talk over it. I want to listen to it. Crank it up.
Beware, man named Leroy Brown.
Leroy Brown.
Now Leroy, morning trouble. You see, he's standing about 6 foot
four. 5 foot eight.
All the downtown ladies call him treetop lover. All the men just call him sir. And he's bad, bad,
bad,
Leroy Brown. Better man.
Johnny, has anyone ever called you treetop lover?
No.
I bet Sarah has.
A treetop lover? Oh, no, I've been to, and I hate to admit, well, I'm not even going to bring it up. Because then I would cause some issues.
Incriminate but, yourself?
No, you know that hotel over, and I know you've been there too, the one over by the Speedway, where they have all these different
Chateau theme, Avalon.
Yeah, the theme rooms.
Yes.
I think there's a treehouse one there, but I've never been in that treehouse at Chateau Avalon. I know you've been there, Steven. I know that's one of your hangouts. So
I have been there before. Thank you very much, Grunny. In the Egyptian themed room.
Oh, yeah, Cleopatra.
You know, hey, that's right. That's exactly right. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
I was the pharaoh. So
you were. You were the pharaoh.
Hey, I'm gonna look. We've all loved up the Le'Veon Bell signing, and so. Just to play devil's advocate, I'm going to read something that was said, and I want you to respond.
Is this from Brett Favre?
Yes.
Okay.
Faber or Favre?
Let's hear what. I saw it, but go ahead and read it, and we'll talk.
Okay.
About it.
Brett Favre, and this was said on the Sirius XM Blitz with.
I
Brett
still
Favre
think you're
Bruce
pronouncing
Murray.
His name wrong.
Atlanta has selected Brett Favre, quarterback, Southern
Favre,
Mississippi.
Dude. Get it right.
That's right. And so this was in the Kansas City Star yesterday. This is what Brett Favre said. Well, they don't need him. I don't know Le'Veon personally. I don't know what kind of guy he is. I do know what kind of player he's been, an incredible player, but they don't need him. And I love Andy Reid. I think the world of Patrick Mahomes. I think their football team is not, I mean, they are beatable, obviously, but they're pretty doggone good right now. And they got a good thing going. And sometimes adding a player of Le'Veon's caliber can do more harm than good. I'm not saying it will, but, you know, think about it this way. What can they do with Le'Veon they're not doing already, other than feeling the need to give him the ball to please him, which is really all you're putting him in for? Tim Grunhart.
Do they need him? They don't really need him.
Yeah, they do.
But it's a great thing to have. It's a great person to have. It's a great option to have. And we've talked about why. Number one, he's going to take some pressure off of this young running back. Number two, he does a great job of pass protection with Patrick Mahomes. Number three, he's another weapon on the field that can cause a lot of issues and headaches for defensive coordinators. You know, I think the Chiefs were going to go to the Super Bowl without Le'Veon Bell. I think they'll go to the Super Bowl with Le'Veon Bell. So, did they need him to go to the Super Bowl and do the things that they wanted to do? I don't really think that they did, but I'm in favor of this move. And usually, I'm not. I have been in Brett Favre's camp with these kind of moves before. I think this is a good one, and I think it's a good one because number one, you have great leadership in that locker room. That locker room is pretty solid, and not one guy or two guys are going to come in there and cause issues in that locker room because it's so solid. You got Patrick Mahomes as the leader. You have Jones as the leader. You have Clark as the leader. You have Kelsey as the leader. I mean, there are some strong personalities that are in there that are not going to let people come in there and F with the whole thing. They're just not going to do it. And number two, you got a guy who could take some pressure off this young kid. That's a lot of pressure for a 21, 22, 23-year-old kid to come in on a Super Bowl team and be the guy that, you know, is the lead running back who's got to do all the different things and responsibilities that running back needs to do. And as this rookie wall hits, which it will, this is not a made-up thing. You know, a lot of guys can bust through it. You know, people talk about Hunt. He busted through it. But, that's few and far between. There's going to be some drop-off, and when that drop-off happens, it's great to have a guy like Bell that could come in and help out. And number three is a guy that is been in a lot of offenses. I heard you guys play that he said, you know, it's just verbiage. It's just different, you know, words. But basically the pass protection is pass protection. You know, he's and a base pass protection. The offensive line is responsible for the four down linemen and the Mike linebacker. So the center walks up or the quarterback walks up. They declare the mic. Now that back knows in a base protection, he has the wheel backer. He's protecting the backside of the quarterback. So he looks out and he's got the wheel backer or anybody that comes into that zone from the weak side, whether it's a safety or that's that wheel backer, the weak backer coming off the edge. He's over there. He has those two. All right, now you're going to say, okay, we're going to turn to protection. We're going to help out Al Gretti. We're going to turn to protection. We're going to run a legit protection. That means now the offensive line is going to be responsible for the four-down lineman and the wheel backer, which now puts the running back into a dual read. He reads Mike to Sam. If they bring Mike, he takes him. If they bring Sam, he takes him. If they bring both, the quarterback throws hot. And the quarterback now is responsible for that Sam backer because if they bring both, the running back's going to take the Mike backer because he's in the middle of the pocket. He's got the best angle. He's the closest to the quarterback. All right, now, if you're in a scat protection, which means that the back is now out of the backfield, now you set him in the backfield, you put him out in the flat, which pulls a safety out, pulls a linebacker out. That takes away one of the blitzers in a scat protection. Scat protection, now the guards are dual reading. It's a lot of times in an odd defense, you run scat protection. They're reading, the Sam to the mic, to the other guards reading the plug to the will, and you're popping and you're reading those two, and you're getting your backs out, and you're giving your back an opportunity to get out and make a play. If you're turning the protection and scatting, it's a four-man line, you're going weak, and now the quarterback the quarterback's going to have to throw hot or get rid of the ball. If the mic comes, if the Sam comes, that's great because now you know that there's no coverage. If there is, that means the safety's coming running up to cover the back out of the backfield, and now you're running a slant or you're running Travis Kelce in the middle field with open space. So it just fits what these guys want to do. So in the whole scheme of things, if you have a running back who understands those concepts, the words, the verbiage may not be the same. But if you have a running back that understands the concepts, knows what he has to do, he understands that maybe it's called jet protection here, or it's called turn protection there, or whatever you can call it. You can call it anything, Overland Park protection. It doesn't matter what you call it, as long as you know the concept and the scheme of what's being called, which these guys have done already. Bell has done it many, many times in Pittsburgh and done it in with the Jets, that he's going to fit in fine. So the learning curve isn't going to be as big for a guy like that coming in who's been around and been able to do that, and he's good at it, which is a positive for the Chiefs. So to answer your question, Brett Favre, do they need Bell? I don't think they need Bell. But it's a great piece to add. Will they go to the Super Bowl without Bell? I think they will. I still think they will. But it helps out this team to go where they want to go with having an experienced running back who could take some of the pressure off that young kid who's in there for the first time. And, all of a sudden you're in a playoff game. And, by the way, Bell's been in a lot of playoff games, and we've seen him. And we've seen him productive in playoff games. Okay? So you have a young guy. And the game is always a little bit quicker in the playoffs. Teams are doing a little bit more. They're trying to trick you a little bit more. And when you have a guy who's been there and done that and been around the league and been in many playoff games, been in big games, he's not going to flinch. And you just never know with a young guy what they're going to do. So you have that insurance policy. Insurance is great.
I feel like the fact that they don't need him is one of the reasons that it makes more sense in a weird way because of when Brett Favre sits there and talks about, oh, are you going to have to worry about Le'Veon Bell getting mad if he's not getting enough touches? Is that going to add something that's a problem in your locker room? If that becomes a problem, the Chiefs can walk away from him. They're not committed to him for anything big financially. They don't need him the way that you've said. Like, they don't have to put up with him being a malcontent. And I think he knows that going in, and the Chiefs know that going in. When they brought in LeSean McCoy last year, they didn't need LeSean McCoy. And when Andy Reid decided he couldn't trust him anymore carrying the football, we didn't see LeSean McCoy on the field anymore. And that's a luxury that the Chiefs have that a lot of teams don't, is that, look, we've got you here. We'd like to have you. You can help us, but we don't need you. We don't have to put up with anything if you're not on board. And it sounds like he is.
See, I don't think that Brett Veach is a reactive kind of guy. I don't think this is, okay, all of a sudden he's available. Let's go get him. Let's go get him. I think that this was something he thought about. I think he had a plan for it. And I think he knew this was coming. So he did his investigation. He did his homework on it to see how it fit. He talked to people on the team. I think you've talked to other coaches around the league and said, hey, how will this guy fit in? But he made the decision. And by the way, Jake, Steven, Nate,
yes,
tell me some of the poor decisions that Brett Veach has made for this team.
Well, you know what? There have been a few, but
maybe picking Mecole Hardman instead of DK Metcalf.
I'd say the Breland Speaks draft pick. But one of the things that I appreciate about Brett Veach is that he has not tried to stick by those mistakes. He's not afraid to walk away from them. Like the Breland Speaks thing, but, you know, he could have tried to push that rock uphill forever. He said, you know what? Didn't work out. We'll move on.
And my counter to that is, you just never know with draft picks,
right,
guys. You
right.
don't. I mean, you know, you could do all your homework, and this guy could be a world beater when he's playing in college football, and he gets to the NFL, and for one reason or another, he just can't do it. And right, that doesn't make him a bad guy. Right. It just makes it is what it is.
Right.
But tell me what free agent, somebody who is a proven guy, who's been around in the league, and he's got bottom dwellers, he's got bottom feeders, and he's also brought in guys that are guys like Frank Clark. He brought in guys that, I mean, were known.
If you're going to be critical, the Hitchens move, it hasn't worked out.
But if you look at Hitchens, who was the one guy that was bringing some physicality in the what was the game?
I bet they would tell you it has worked out.
Yeah, I was going to say, why do you say it hasn't worked out, Jim?
I just feel like that is consistently a problem position for the defense. Consistently. I mean, there has been no consistent good play out of Hitchens. Sure, there's been glimpses. Sure, he's brought some energy and some strength into the moments.
But you can't say he's a bust.
I can just say it hasn't worked out.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know if I agree with that or not.
He played a lot on that Super Bowl team, right? Didn't he? I mean,
somebody has to play linebacker.
Yeah, but I guess my point is like maybe he hasn't been theoretically the production hasn't matched the money.
Maybe I shouldn't say Hitchens. Maybe I should say the linebacker position. Addressing the linebacker position because, you know, going out and trading for Raglan and picking up Darren Lee.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't just isolate Hitchens. Maybe I should say being able to address the linebacker position hasn't.
Signing of Orlando Scandrick.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, we're looking for things to be critical.
Right. You asked the question. Yeah, he's done way more good than bad.
So would you say would you say he's batting about 800 right now?
He's doing terrific.
750, yeah.
Easy.
750,
I got no complaints.
Yeah.
I got no complaints.
You know what? I wouldn't have any complaints if he was batting 500.
I mean, you can say he's batting 1,000 because he won the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Honestly, like he's done it perfectly because last year they won the freaking Super Bowl.
The dude's got it wired right now.
Honestly,
it's nitpicking.
Yeah.
You could say that the LeSean McCoy deal wasn't great because, I mean, they end up benching him and not letting him play any the rest of the year, but they still won the Super Bowl.
But all the guys that we've talked about, they may not have played to the level that we wanted them to play at, or we didn't have a playable level maybe they didn't want to play at, but they all played.
Yep.
They were all in there in a what? Super Bowl year. So, I mean, we are nitpicking. But, you know, they didn't.
I think your point is he's not just going, oh, hey, what the heck? Yeah. Let's just go take a shot at this and not put any.
And then all of a sudden, predictions before
and a guy can't even get on the field. You know, these guys are at least on the field, and there is some production. But go ahead.
Okay, first of all, give us your prediction. Now, I know you think I'm going to ask you about the Chiefs, but no, I'm going to ask you about a rivalry that you have been a part of, not just Chiefs-Broncos. You've been part of the Sunflower Showdown between Kansas and Kansas State. You know about the juices that are flowing through Nate Buchanan right now, firsthand.
All right, the Sunflower Showdown.
How did I know that was coming?
Well, give us the score of the Sunflower Showdown, please.
Oh, man, now that the running back Williams dropped out. I mean,
what are you going to do?
You know,
what are you going to do?
That's an appropriate drop.
KU, right now, there's not catching any breaks. But, you know, their head coach gets COVID. Their best running back opts out. All right, so, you know, I think that they lose by 21. I think it's competitive. Listen,
we are talking about K-State.
You know, the one thing about KU is it seems like they could stay competitive with K-State. And, you know, it's funny because I'm not going to tell you who the coach was, but we're standing on the sideline, we're playing in Manhattan, and we were right there. And he said, you know what, this is when it usually turns here, Will. This would be some interception or a turnover. All of a sudden, you know, Katie bar the door, they start to just pull away. And that's exactly what happened. So now that's kind of what is in the mindset of KU. I think they could stay they could stay close. I think the guys that have played for KU have, you know, this is a big game for them, and it always is a big game. I mean, I know people say, well, maybe they don't hype it up as much as K-State does, but they do. You know, I think K-State gets a lot of production out of Kansas kids that KU doesn't get for some one reason or another, and that needs to change.
Because they recruit them?
Yeah, well, Kansas recruits Kansas kids. You know what? It's just K-State does a great job of being able to get those kids that maybe, you know, some people didn't think were quite big enough, strong enough, or fast enough, and they get there and they develop. Yeah.
It's not true.
So quit. You know, don't let your hatred for Kansas seep into your
Kansas State players are saying it. Then tell them not to say it. They're the ones that are saying Kansas didn't recruit him. Nate went on a tirade about this yesterday. I'm just repeating what Nate says.
Well, yeah.
Is that all right?
Well, here's the thing, too, that we got to get to.
That's right. What about the Chiefs and Broncos? What's the score going to be there?
Chiefs and Broncos. I think this game is going to be a bit closer than we all expect it to be. It's a divisional game. It's up there, even though the crowd will not be there. Denver is a tough place to win, even though the Chiefs have done a pretty good job of winning there. But there's been some close games of late up in Denver. But I think the Chiefs win. I think they win by about 14. I think it's close going into the fourth quarter, and then the Chiefs pull away. 14 or 17, I think, you know, the Chiefs will win the game. I think there's a better football players. They just got a better team right now than Denver does. Defensively, they have some of their big guys that are out. Although Chubbs is, you know, you gotta account for him, because that kid is a game changer. But I think the Chiefs win the game.
Always have a Chubb watching Mahomes.
Hey, wow! Hello.
Hey. Oh, it's a game. That's a game changer.
What's on your shirt there in the picture from the Super
Bowl? I think
Bowl
you
party.
Spilled a beer on me. I think I turned around. And you, yeah, I think you like
that.
I think that's exactly what happened. You don't remember because you don't remember much.
No. That is correct, Timmy. You remember. That is the correct answer.
I know.
And finally, let's get a round of applause. Let's officially welcome Patrick Mahomes to the world of being a girl dad. Congratulations
girl dad.
To Patrick Mahomes. Awesome. They found out yesterday that the beautiful baby Mahomes is going to be a girl.
How are you doing?
I don't know if you've ever seen that thing on Facebook. It's with the Little Rascals, and I think it's which is the one that the little one, I can't remember the name of him, but
Spanky
was throwing money out the window. He's just throwing money out the window. That's a girl dad. So I know Patrick Mahomes has a lot of money to throw out the window, but wait till they're in their teens or in their early 20s. Money just flies out the window, and you're starting to see that probably a little bit too, Steve.
Yeah, I was gonna say, wait till they're 11.
Yeah.
And taking all the money. That is great.
Nate,
congratulations.
Save your money because it's coming.
That's right. That's Tim Grunhardt. Thank you so much, Timmy. We appreciate the time. Back after this on WHB.